Right now, let's talk baseball and bring in Jim Callis from MLB.com, who covers the prospects, the draft, and everything about the game of baseball. We're going to talk with him about the offseason, the first Jim's been and still may be in Arizona for the Arizona Fall League. And I taped the game in the broadcast the other night. I've not seen it yet. I was watching a little football, of course, Jim, as you can understand, on a Saturday in November. But how'd that game go?
It was good. There was a lot of excitement. A lot of the best players kind of did what you'd expect them to do. You know, Vlad Guerrero Jr. smoked a ball at 117 miles an hour off top of the wall for a double. Nate Pearson, also the Blue Jays, hit 104 miles an hour. Pete Alonso, who led the minor leagues in homers, crushed a 103 mile an hour fastball from Pearson for a home run. It was a good game, a walk-off hit to decide it in the bottom of the ninth. So it was a pretty good amount of excitement. You know, instead of watching Alabama LSU, where there was no drama, Bill, you should have been watching that one live.
You're right. I actually was somewhere, believe it or not, that did not have MLB Network, Jim. So
okay,
that was
fair.
One
I'll
part of the
that.
Problem. So, I've got it taped, and we'll watch it. We'll watch it soon. What did Christian Pache and Kyle Muller, the two Braves prospects, they do anything on Saturday?
Not the word they you know were stars of the game, anything. But Pache, you know, looked very smooth in the outfield. He went 1-for-2. He got a single off a breaking ball. Muller, they were shuttling pitchers in and out so much, but he worked the fifth inning and he gave up a run. He was up to 97, struck out two batters, but also gave up two hits and a walk and allowed a run.
Jim, let's talk about Christian Pache first. You had a tweet that we discussed on our show a little bit last week after you made it, talking about the fact that the Braves have, in your opinion, another potential five-tool player, and you mentioned that you had spoken with an executive that talked about Pache's power potential. First, before we talk about the power, I want to talk about the defense. And I tweeted this earlier in the day that it's kind of interesting that I'm talking about the possibility of replacing a three-time Gold Glove winner in Henry Inciarte with another fantastic defensive player. But that's kind of how Christian Pache is looked at and projected to be, even better than someone like Henry Inciarte. Tell us about his defense.
Yeah, I think the consensus, talking to scouts, is that he's the best defensive outfielder in the minor league. I mean, he's a well above average runner. He really glides to the ball. Dan O'Dowd made that comment. You know, former Rockies GM was one of the guys doing the game on MLB Network Saturday night, and he talked about how you could just see how effortlessly he glides to the ball. And not that this is what you judge center fielders on, but Pache also has a plus arm, which is unusual for that position. It seems like most of your center fielders have below average arms. And I think it's a case where you kind of have the best of both worlds here, because you have a three-time Gold Glove winner in Ciarte, who also does, you know, I know this year was probably his worst year offensively in the three in Atlanta, but he usually does a pretty good job of getting on base. You know, he's got, you know, a little bit of gap power in there too. But, like, you know, the thing to remember is Pache's only 19 years old. He's the second youngest player in the Fall League, behind only Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And you don't have to rush him. You know, the Braves are obviously, you know, they're looking to win. They just won a division title. They're going to plan on contending. And so I think what you do is NCRT signed through 2021, I believe, to a fairly affordable contract. So anyway, I mean, you don't have to rush Pache. You know, and I think he does need time to develop. He's still kind of raw offensively and on the base pass, despite his tools. So, you know, if Pache's not ready for two more years, you have Ender and Ciarte, and then, you know, in 2021, you know, if Pache's ready by then, you could see where Ender is, and if Ender's still going strong, you could trade him for something to help bolster another part of the team. But, you know, you don't really have to rush Pache because you have Ender.
Would you be tempted, however, if the opportunity presented itself, to trade Inciarte and move Acuna there at least the time being until Pache is ready, whether it's a year from now or whenever?
It all depends. I mean, every time we talk about trades on your show, Bill, and anytime I talk about trades, it depends on what the trade is. I mean, you know, Nobody should be untouchable. I mean, I'm not saying, like, if the Red Sox decided, hey, geez, you know, we got to move Mookie Betts, and look, I'm not saying they're going to do that, you know, and you had to give up Ender and Ciarte, I'd say, yeah, go ahead and do that. But, like, it just depends on the trade. I mean, the one thing about Ender is I do think he's somewhat underrated because he's not a big power guy. And, you know, I mean, he's hit for average. He gets on base, but there's a decent, you know, a pretty good value with Ender, especially when you got him on a pretty affordable contract, too. I mean, I think he earned $7.7 million this year and $8.7 million next year. And, I mean, he's been worth that easily his first couple of years, you know, for first 3 years in Atlanta with defense. So I think that's I think it's the best of both worlds. Does it give you the flexibility? Yeah, Acuna could play center. If you had somebody who wanted NCRT. Now, all that said, as much as I like Pache, and I like Pache a lot, I don't think he's really that close to being ready for the big leagues. I mean, I know he was in Double A for the last month of the season, but he hit kind of a soft 260. He's still only 19 years old. I think he turns 20 right after the Arizona Fall League season ends. And even if you look at the numbers, you know, I did mention, as you mentioned, talking to a American League assistant GM, and you know, when you look at Pache, probably his least impressive tool at this point has been his power. And this guy said, "Nah, he's going to have power. It's going to be 20 plus homers once he gets going in the big leagues." But he's not there yet. And for a guy with well above average speed, I want to say I think he got caught more than he succeeded stealing bases. So there's still a lot to work on with Pache. I think the Braves would be doing him a disservice by throwing him in, you know, or counting on him being ready at some point in 2019. You know, I think he needs most of a full year in Double A and probably half a year in Triple A. So if you trade Ender, sure, but I wouldn't do that with the idea that Pache is going to be playing center field before the end of next year.
Jim Callis, our guest, MLB.com. You know, Jim, in our discussions we've had over the years, I've come to the conclusion, and you may correct me on this, that you're a lot more patient with prospects than sometimes teams are. You were very cautious in trying to say that the Braves needed to be very, very patient on some of their pitchers and some of their prospects. But boy, these teams seem to be even more trigger happy, and this is a MLB question, not just Braves, on bringing these prospects up, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's me being more patient. Like, look, I mean, Acuna could have been up at the end of 2017, and that would have been fine. I just think with pitchers in general, the Braves, I'll give them credit. I mean, they've pushed some of these guys like Soroka and Allard and even Toussaint this year and Kyle Wright, you know, very quickly, and they've succeeded, which isn't always the case. But, like, I don't think I'd say I'm probably, you know, maybe not on each team's individual basis, but in general, I think I probably kind of walk the middle there pretty well. So I guess with me saying Pache needs more time, that's because I believe it. I don't think I'm being more conservative. I just think, and then look, I'm not going to read too much into a month, but even if you look at the high A numbers, I mean, he had a 310 or so on base percentage in high A. I mean, what's that going to translate into at the big league level? Not very good. And he hasn't hit for much power. I just think, like, as much as I like Pache, I mean, we're talking about a guy who put up a 717 ops this year and struck out almost five times as much as he walked. So, I mean, he's going to need some time to develop, but I do love the ceiling.
What about Kyle Muller and what you heard and saw of him in the Arizona Fall League? He's one of the three big 2016 draft picks with Ian Anderson and Joey Wentz, and boy, he took a step forward this year. And to hear that, boy, Jim, that opened my ears a little bit when you said he was still throwing 97 after all this pitching this year. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing to kind of keep in mind a little bit is, you know, when you get these guys in a one game look, you know, whether it's the futures game or the Fall Stars game, and they're, you know, pitching one inning, the guys are pumping it up for the gun. So I don't think he's going to sit at 97, but they've been using him, you know, kind of in relief has been his role down there. But, you know, he's been pretty impressive. You know, the control's been a little spotty. You know, again, it's such a small sample size down there. I don't read too much into stats, but no, he's impressive. I mean, you know, the Braves have, you know, I think the two teams that probably have the two best farm systems in baseball and have the best, you know, pitching depth in terms of minor league prospects in baseball are the Padres and the Braves. And, you know, as interesting as Kyle Muller is, and I do like him, I mean, just in terms of lefties, you got Gohara and Allard and Wentz, You know, that's four guys right there. So, I mean, you have some surplus. You know, and obviously they're loaded with righties with Soroka and Wright and Anderson and Toussaint and on and on and on and on. Bryce Wilson, you know, the pitching depth is pretty incredible.
Braxton Davidson's numbers continue to be really weird. Boy, he evidently hit some homers out there, but
too, because it's funny. I've been out there twice now, and I'll go back for another week. But I was out there at the beginning of the season, and he wasn't doing much of anything. And then right before I went back, he had a two-homer game, and he followed up with another two-homer game. So I don't know if he's done a whole lot other than that, because he's still only hitting 250 with that surge, and he only has one other homer in his other 10 games. But for 2 days, he was like the Mark McGwire, whoever you want to compare him to, of the Arizona Fall League.
Weird. Very, very weird. All right, any other Bryce prospect out there that you noticed?
I'm trying to think, because it's like, okay, it's Peoria. I was going to say, it's always like weird. Like they move the guys around. Not so much with this play, although he's having DC. I will give Ray Patrick Ditter props for being very nice to translate for me when I was interviewing Christian Pache one day. So he was a guy. But no, I think Pache is clearly the best. You know, Thomas Burrows is a lefty, you know, lefty reliever with a good arm. He's kind of interesting too. But I'd say those two and Colin Mueller are probably the three Braves, you know, who stood out the most outside of Braxton Davidson's 2-day power surge.
Jim Callis is our guest. All right, I want to play general manager now. Let's say Jim Callis is the Braves general manager, which we all know should have happened a long time ago. You've seen this team now. You've seen, like, Alex Anthopoulos. You've kind of taken this year to evaluate what you have before you know what you need. What would your approach be to take this team from a 90-win division winner to a World Series contender?
Well, yeah, and, you know, I think they're in a good spot because, you know, I think that division, we'll see what the Phillies do. Everybody thinks the Phillies, and they probably will, could go out and spend heavily on free agency. You know, the Nationals had a disappointing year. The Mets are a mess. The Marlins are a mess. So, I mean, there's some opportunity, too. I mean, not only do the Braves have a good team, but you're in a division that's very winnable. It's not like you're, you know, in the AL East with the Red Sox and Yankees and the Rays have a great farm system, and you're thinking, geez, this is going to be tough. You know, I guess what I would do is, you know, I would definitely be open to making moves for veterans to improve the team, but at the same time, I wouldn't want to go crazy to where I gut my farm system. You know, I mean, it looks good, and I'm not second-guessing him at all. It looks good what Dave Dombrowski did in Boston, but if the Red Sox don't win a World Series while Dave Dombrowski's there, everybody's going to be on him in the long run because they traded away so many prospects. Yeah. So I guess it would kind of depend on a deal by deal. You know, like you know me, I'm open to. I don't think anybody's ever untouchable. Like just case in point, and I would not want to trade him. I could just see Trejo. Callis says trade Acuna. You know, look, if you could make a superstar deal, if you could make an unbelievable deal, but like it was dependent on again, I'll throw out a ridiculous trade. Let's say the Red Sox said, "Hey, we'll give you Mookie Betts." And we'll give you, I don't know, who else you want? Xander Bogaerts, but you got to give us Ronald Acuna. I'm like, okay, sorry, we love Acuna, but we're making that deal. So I don't think anybody's untouchable. And the one thing I would probably try to be proactive about is, you know, we were just talking about all that pitching depth. And, you know, pitchers, you know, there's a lot of attrition with pitchers. And not all your pitching prospects turn out as good as you hope. Not all of them, you know, some of them are going to get hurt. And I might look to try to, you know, trade, you know, if I could make a deal where I had to trade two or three of my pitching prospects, but I could, you know, I mean, and I don't know who the pitcher would be on the trade market, but let's say there's a guy I could build my pitching staff around that would be my definite ace, and it was going to cost me, you know, three young pitchers in return or whatever, I'd think about it. You know, you know, you've got like a little bit of redundancy. You know, Austin Riley looks pretty good. Johan Camargo had a really nice season. You know, maybe I trade one of those guys in the right deal. We were just talking about Enciarte and Pache. Again, if I, you know, I'm not looking to just trade guys for sake of trading them, but if I can get, you know, like if Derek Jeter and company were giving away players like they were last year, you know, a year ago, I talk about, you know, Yelich or Asuna or Stanton, you know, if it was the right deal. So, I mean, you have any particular targets you want to see them trade for?
Well, a lot of people are wondering, Jim, if in fact the Marlins put JT Realmuto out there, if the Braves will once again talk with them about him. Some people believe he's the top catcher in the sport. Do you think he's worth going after?
Yeah, again, I mean, it would depend on the price tag, but I would say yes, because while the Braves have done a great job of cobbling together more value than you'd think from guys like Kurt Suzuki and Tyler Flowers, those guys are A, both old, B, you know, how sustainable is that from year to year? And they don't really have a slam dunk catching prospect. You know, where you're saying, oh, that guy's going to be their catcher of the future, you know, for the next, you know, however many years. So yes, I would be, you know, I mean, and again, if I'm the Marlins, I would think the Braves could offer you something pretty good for JT Realmuto. So yeah, I think, and again, that's a case too where that upgrades me as well at the big league level. So I would definitely, you know, be interested in pursuing that trade if I were the Braves. Yeah, you know, obviously, I'm not going to give him Ronald Acuna, and I'm not going to give him, you know, I'm not going to overpay for him, but I'd be willing to pay a nice price to get JT Realmuto.
You know, I've tried to label this and to describe this in a way that I think makes sense, because I agree with what you just said about it's very, very rare that you say no one is untouchable. But you have to believe, Jim, that Alex Anthopoulos, by now, after a year of really evaluating all these pitchers, has at the very least a list of players he would prefer to not deal away. If I were to ask you, all right, which of these pitchers that you've seen for Atlanta, both at the big league level and the ones that are to come, would you prefer to not deal away? Would it be Ian Anderson, Kyle Wright, Soroka, Tukey? Who would you have on that list?
Well, probably the guy of all those I'd want to keep the most would be Soroka, because I just think he's got the best combination of stuff and polish. Although, you know, what's going on with his shoulder? You know, we don't know exactly, because he didn't pitch a lot after he went down. But all that said, as much as I like Mike Soroka, and I like all those guys, let's say I'm going after JT Realmuto, and, you know, what are we giving up, three players for JT Realmuto? Well, let's just say, and I'm just throwing these names out here, I'm not even really thinking about it, but let's say, okay, I'm good with trading Austin Riley because I've got Camargo and I really like him, and let's say I'm good with trading Drew Waters because as much as I like him, I've got Acuna and I've got Pache coming, so I'll trade Drew Waters. But let's say, you know, let's say that the Marlins wanted three players, and I'm going to give them one of the pitchers. If they said, look, it's got to be Mike Soroka, I'd probably give him Mike Soroka because of my pitching depth. So, I think that's the other nice thing about the pitching depth. Why I like these guys, I don't know if there's that, you know, I mean, I don't see a guy who I'm like, okay, that's the next Clayton Kershaw, or, you know, that's the next, you know, Zach Greinke or whoever. I don't know if one of these guys stands head and shoulders above the rest of them that say, well, no, I'm not going to trade, you know, there's no way I'm trading Mike Soroka. Because if Mike Soroka is the deal breaker on JT Realmuto, and I'm fine with the rest of the package, then I would give him Mike Soroka over, say, Ian Anderson, if that's who I was trying to trade.
Yeah, and Jim, I really believe that's the approach they're going to take, and it's more about the numbers more than anything. And this morning I was writing an article and was looking at the numbers, and just for example, all right, let's assume that for some reason, somehow, Julio Teheran is not on this team next year, traded away for something, dumped, whatever you want to call it. They would then have Folty, Newcomb, Gausman, and then if you assume that they're going to acquire some type of veteran pitcher, whether it's as a free agent or in a trade, to be the other guy, whatever number that's going to be, and then there's only one spot left, then you've got so many candidates for that spot that if, let's say, he's fallen in love with Tukey Toussaint or Max Fried or someone, then, you know, as much as I love the kid too, you can afford to trade a Mike Soroka for a JT Realmuto. So in a way, it's going to come down to math, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one thing I'd say too, and I do like, you know, I mean, you know, Folty and Newcomb, you know, this was their first, you know, really successful season as a starter. And I did like the Gausman pickup because I didn't think they gave up anything that they were going to really regret in the long run. I thought they got him really cheap. I thought that was, to be honest, a horrible trade for the Orioles, considering Gausman wasn't like a free agent to be. So you want to have some of that depth because, you know, you're probably not going to get through the year with just five starters. But yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you know, I'm not going to give, you know, six pitchers to the Marlins for JT Realmuto. But like I said, is you know, of their young guys who aren't established yet, I like Soroka better than And, well, you know what? If he's healthy, and I'm not going to claim to be a doctor and know exactly what's going on, if Mike Soroka is healthy, I'd rather take his future, you know, and the financial aspects of it involved, because you have a lot of control remaining too. I take his future over Fultes or Newcomb's or even Gossman's, you know, to be, you know, also factoring in, you know, what he's going to cost me for the next couple of years too. But again, if I'm just making this up, I'm not privy to anything. But let's say the Marlins say, hey, you know, we want a pitcher, and we'll take Austin Riley, and we'll take Drew Waters for Real Muto. You know, and maybe that takes a fourth player. Who knows? And they're saying it has to be Mike Soroka, and I'm thinking, wow, geez, I'd rather give you, you know, Tukey Toussaint, or, I mean, it'd easy to say give you Ian Anderson, because he's probably the furthest from the big leagues of any of them. But, you know, whatever. But again, if the difference is they're like, no, we're not going to take Ian Anderson, it's got to be Mike Soroka, then I'd give up Mike Soroka to get GT Real Muto, because it's different than it was a year ago. You know, I still have a ton of young pitching, and I'm ready to win.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference right there, no doubt about it. Great stuff, Jim. We always appreciate you coming on. I have a feeling we'll get you around the winter meetings as well, as we start to see some activity. It may start a little bit early this year. That's the talk, isn't it? We may see earlier activity than a year ago when it was really slow.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, from the free agents, you know, Machado and Harper, I mean, you're not gonna wait around. On that. I mean, if you want those guys, you're gonna have, you know, you need to go, you know, make your pitch and go after them hard. And then, you know, I mean, we could see more trades, because I do think, you know, the free agent crop isn't that great. Like Patrick Corbin, and not to knock to Patrick Corbin, I mean, he had a really nice year, but like coming into year, you know, I wasn't thinking that Patrick Corbin might get like a 6-year, $150 million deal, and Patrick Corbin might get that, and there's just not a lot of pitching. So I think there's going to be, I think there's going to be a lot of trade. If you want to improve your pitching staff, you're probably going to have to do it, you know, through trades. I mean, when I say you, I don't mean the Brad, I mean anybody. There's just not that much out there on the free agent market. So it could make for an interesting offseason.
Yeah, I think so too. Jim, thank you. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bill. Take care. Bye-bye.